Football, hockey, rugby union, netball, cricket, and rugby league. There can be no doubts that women's team sport is exploding in the UK right now, both in terms of success and the numbers of people following them. One sport which has gone under the radar though is women's basketball. Yet, while they may not have grabbed the headlines, the GB women's team is undergoing somewhat of a revolution right now too. Earlier this year, they finished a historic fourth at the Eurobasket Championships. In contrast, they came 20th at the previous tournament in 2015, while England's women claimed a sensational silver medal at last year's Commonwealth Games. Under the guidance of Chema Busetta, the team will now contest an Olympic qualification tournament early next year to try and reach Tokyo 2020, for what would only be a second appearance for the GB women's squad at an Olympic Games, having featured as the host nation in 2012. As well as this, England Basketball have also recently launched their all-girls campaign to really drive up the participation rates of women and girls in this country, with the recent stats showing that 25% of the 1 million plus players in this country are female, which is worryingly low. They will be using the success of the women's team and working with clubs to not only encourage more women and girls to take up the sport as players, but also to become coaches, volunteers and officials too. We at Sportsbill were lucky enough to be given the opportunity to sit down with the aforementioned Chema and Stuart Kellett, Chief Executive Officer of England Basketball, to delve into this exciting new project and uncover the reasons why the women's team has improved so rapidly in recent years. Hello listeners and welcome to our latest Sportsbill episode, which we are dedicating entirely to women's basketball. We are fortunate enough today to be welcomed by two very special guests, the first being Chema Busetta. Chema is the head coach of the Great Britain women's basketball team and has undergone somewhat a resurgence with the team under his tenure, becoming the first home nation to reach the Eurobasket semi-finals early this year and reaching the qualifier for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, as well as also leading the England team to a superb Commonwealth Games silver last year. And secondly, we are also thrilled and very, very delighted to be welcomed by the Basketball England CEO, Stuart Kellett. So first of all, guys, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
So we're going to split this episode into two parts. And in part one, we will be discussing the recent success of the international women's team before then switching on to a brand new, exciting initiative to grow the sports across the country, in particular for women and young girls. But first of all, To the recent success of the women's team, and we sit here just 2 months after a historic run at the Eurobasket event, reaching the semi-finals. How are you guys reflecting on that tournament now, just a few weeks later?
Well, I think this is obvious a great achievement, and then it's a great opportunity to show that women basketball can be a top sport. Great Britain is not a basketball country, but can be a basketball country, and I think these girls prove that we can get good successes when we join a group of people and we do our job well. So I think it's just this is the end of a process that is not finished yet. I mean, we began last year with the Commonwealth, then we were able to qualify for Eurobasket, then we were step by step, game by game, and then we reached the semi-final. Now we are at the pre-Olympic, this is the next challenge, and then we hope to be at Olympic Games, and if we go there, to do something important also, not just soar. But first we have to win the pre-Olympic. And then the reflection is that when you have a good group of players with good attitude that believe that they can do it, and you give them the chance to grow, to take responsibility, to be ambitious about achieving something, then it's possible to do something. Of course, in a sport, sometimes you can do it, sometimes you cannot. Basketball is a game where you can win by 1 point or lose by 1 point, and this is the difference. But what is important is we were able to compete at high level, and in this case, able to get the results. So I think what is important to understand is that, okay, it's possible, but if we want to continue at this level, we have to move forward and keep doing things well, even improving things that we have to improve.
You mentioned there the attitude, especially of the players, and it's been a
it's been a tough couple of years off the pitch for the sport, but the players have stayed strong and keep putting out these performances and getting better and better. How much sort of credit and praise do they deserve for the way in which they've held themselves and continue to keep going despite everything that's been happening?
Well, I think they deserve all the credit because part of the preparation of the team is what they did on their own. The sacrifice that they did, leaving families, leaving holidays, and being able to be here and also preparing for themselves. When we started the camp, the players came in very good shape because they did their own job. I mean, they think they assumed the responsibility of the preparation. So they deserve all the credit. Without this attitude of the players, it wouldn't be possible to achieve that.
And Stuart, from your point of view, when so you brought Chima in to be the head coach and looking forward ahead across these 4 years, did you ever envisage that the women's team would have already achieved so much in such a fairly short space of time?
Well, there's always the aspiration for the women's team to kick on and achieve. I think that the biggest difficulty we've had, and Chema doesn't really focus on this because he focuses on the on-court issues and things that he can control, but as a governing body and as a partnership with the British Federation, we know that one of the constraints is resource. Now, it's not all about resource, because the things that Chema's done in a really kind of people resourceful way is somehow get the best out of these players with not a lot of practice games. We're always at a disadvantage because our preparation schedule is always thinner than the opposition. So pound for pound, we've kind of got used to doing a lot more with the little we've got. And we're not bragging about that, we just have to get on with it. But we think that we've done so well with so little resource that the belief in the basketball community is if we just got a little bit more support, just think what we could do. We could actually qualify and do really well at Olympics. Now, we're setting out to qualify, but if we did qualify, and we're hoping and setting out to do that, it's like we will need some support because we have the potential. And it's interesting that EuroBasket, when I spoke to some of the players, everybody underestimated GB. It's like they haven't got much resources, not much preparation time. You know, they've won a Commonwealth silver, but in Europe, we haven't done a great deal. But we kept winning with very little money. We've been talking earlier about a lack of shirt sponsor. But each time, the team managed to punch well above the weight and the weight of the money we've got. And what started to happen, and this is why we thought this was really good timing for the campaign, which I know we're going to talk about later, but the belief in the women's game has really rocketed, saying we can achieve. And the way I'm seeing the women's team is that whilst it is about elite basketball, in a way, in the last 15 years, that is a representation of grassroots basketball. So whatever, however people have gone through trials, however hard club volunteers have worked locally, they've worked together. And what's come out of that is that talent's been developed and nurtured, and now Chema's at the helm sort of getting the best out of that group. So there's a real pride that's developed around the team. And there's a belief, and we thought, well, we're at the cusp of something special, so why not embrace the whole of the basketball community from a women and girls perspective? So the belief's there. I think one of the issues now might be about money's expectations. Like, we've been the underdog and won. We've been the underdog with no money and won. We're now Olympic qualifying. So there's an expectation that's rising, but we do need to put a resource behind it to get this thing over the line, really, and that's what we're concentrating on at the moment.
It's quite, I know we have this in hockey as well, we've got Olympic qualifiers coming up with our athletes and you guys will have an Olympic qualifier, and it's a fairly sort of unique situation for these athletes to be in because having qualified for London as a host, that's their only appearance. So does anything in particular change in terms of preparation for this tournament, or do you prepare for it as you do any other tournament?
Our preparation for the tournament is what we have done before already, and now to try to use the strengths of that preparation that we did before, because we will not have much time. Now this pre-Olympic is going to be played within the club's season in February, with just 4 days practice and then play. And then now we have in November 1 week also for the next EuroBasket, which we will use that as a part of the growing process preparation, although it's for another competition, but this is what we have. So now we have to do what we have done until this moment. I mean, we have been preparing the team in short periods of time for the windows to qualify for the last EuroBasket. Then we have more time now during the summer. And now we have just a few days to prepare. So we have to trust what we have done before, because this is why we are here. We are here because we did something good. Now we have to do this again, and this is what our chances are, really. And then if we qualify for the Olympics, then we will have more time, and then we will have to do more specific preparation for that, because the Olympic Games have special situations, the atmosphere, the environment, the media, everything is different. You are part of the whole group, you know. So that needs that. But this is now too far. Now we have to prepare the pre-Olympic, and this is another basketball tournament. This is it, with higher level, but another basketball tournament. This is what we have to do.
A lot of the players in interviews given recently have described you as a great motivator for them and a fantastic coach, but I'm guessing they probably won't need too much motivation to really get themselves in a positive mind frame for this tournament.
Well, probably not. I mean, motivation, you have to use the doses that is necessary. Not more than that, you know. And I think, of course, motivation is high in this moment. But now what we need is to develop self-confidence. Because it's not only motivation, it's also self-confidence. We have to believe that we can do it. Sometimes when the motivation is very high, if self-confidence is not high, this is a problem. So, but I think these players have been motivated all the time. I mean, I don't think I did so much about motivation, really. I think I did more about self-confidence, because these players show from the first moment that they were ambitious enough and they wanted to do something. But what is important is that they needed to believe, and they had the attitude to believe, and we believe. But we believe also because the team was growing and achieving step by step things that were like new challenges that we were able to achieve, and this strengthens self-confidence a lot. And then through that, then you are more motivated, of course, because you are motivated about things that you can do it. If you cannot do it, you lose this motivation, you lose it. No? So I think now, of course, the motivation is high, but what is important now is to strengthen self-confidence and to control the stress that will be around the team during the games. I think it's important that we are able to be isolated from all the atmosphere around the team. This is what we did in Commonwealth Games. This is what we did during the Eurobasket. And I think the team is very good on that, to focus on what we have to do, to focus on what happened inside the court, you know, and this is what is important now. And going step by step. Okay, of course, we have the goal to go to the Olympics. Not only to go to the Olympics. I think this is not ambitious enough. We have to go to the Olympics, and if we go to the Olympics, we have to do something there. It's not only show up and just go, and then go the first day, the opening ceremony, and that's it. No. We have to go there to do something. But in order to do that, we have to qualify now. And then we have to think on the qualification. I don't think on the Olympic Games, nothing. I think on the qualification. When we are qualified, then we will think at the Olympics. This is one part of the philosophy of this team, and this is what is important, step by step, step by step. This is it.
And this is a question I'm sort of going to throw out to both of you, because you might have different answers. But what's been the biggest change amongst the players during this run, or has there been a change, or is it just a combination of things coming together and just working?
Well, I think the players have had a good attitude all the time, but probably it's important that the focus on the team orientation. I'm not saying it was bad before, but I think this is something that the generosity of these players to put the team in front of the individual needs and egos, I think that was very important for this team. How people help each other, how people support each other. Well, first day when I signed for GB 4 years ago, the first meeting I had with the team, the president or the chairman at that time was there. The chairman has changed a few times during this period, but the one who was there, and then what I said, well, what is the most important thing in the team? Trust. Trust, this is it. If we trust each other, you have to trust your teammates, you have to trust the directors, you have to trust the coaches, you have to trust yourself. And this is it. And if trust is there, then we can do many things. And I think, fortunately, I think this trust has been something very important. Also, we talk about the positive glasses. And then it's important not to be blind, because the glasses are not to be blind and I want to believe because I want to believe. No, this is not. The glasses are to see better the situation, okay? To see reality. But we have to see the positive reality that can help us to grow. And I think this has been a very important aspect for this team also. We went to Commonwealth Games and we lost against Canada by 26 points the first game, the first day of the competition. Then we beat Canada 6 days later in the semi-final. What did we do? I mean, something changed. What changed was, okay, we learned from the first game, of course, because if you don't learn, you are stupid. Really, you have to learn. But also we focus on things that we did good. Despite we lost, we did things good. We have to do that again and change something that we did. And then we had the talent to do that, and we did it. So the positive glasses is to see the reality and then trust. Trust, because maybe your teammate is not playing well, but you have to trust the teammate. If you don't trust your teammate, then you go on your own. If you don't trust the players, also. Sometimes I put a player on the court, and maybe some people say, oh my God, how is this player there? We have to trust the players. If we don't trust the players, we cannot win. So it's important to trust. This is it, you know? It's easy to say, it's difficult to do it. But the beginning is to believe in that, no? And I think of course, also the players developed from the basketball point of view, because we were able to organize the way of playing that was not there before. For example, we improved a lot in defense, because in Spain, which is a top country in basketball, defense is a must. And then we developed a system of defense that I thought from the first place that was very good for the team. With a lot of switching between players, attacking instead of moving back, taking risks. And I think this has been a very important aspect of the development of the team, that kind of defense, because we were able to play against very good teams that they had always problems to attack our defense. And I think that was a very important aspect. And also the empowerment of the players in the offense was very important. The players felt free about playing, making decisions on the court, and I think, okay, there is always a pattern of playing, but I think that was a very flexible pattern, and the players liked that and took responsibility. And some players, they had the talent sometimes, but they, for example, they didn't shoot the ball, or they were scared about missing or failing, and then I think it was important that they understood that if you don't fail, it's very easy not to make mistakes. If you do nothing, you don't make mistakes. But if you want to do something, you have to make mistakes. This is part of the game. And then we have to trust people who make right decisions even if they don't score. And I think that was very important, because many players were able to contribute to the offensive side of the game, scoring points. And this is important. If you play only with two who can score, it's very difficult. And I think from the basketball point of view, these changes have been very important. But again, without the attitude, it couldn't be possible. Because people in general, and especially elite players, not only in basketball, elite athletes, at some point, because they are successful at the level, they don't like to change. People are reluctant to change, to do things that are new, to do things that are not what I did always. But we always said, if we do the same, after the first campaign, when I came here, it was late, we had a very difficult campaign, we didn't qualify for Eurobasket for the first time that I was here. And then we had a meeting, and then we said, look, if we do the same, the result will be the same. We have to change. In which direction? We have to decide the direction. We have to see, but we have to change, because we couldn't do much in the first 2 years in terms of training, because we didn't have much time to practice. And then even the first list that we had, I signed more or less in this time of the year. In November was the first window. I didn't even knew the players. I didn't even know the players. But we have to change. And then what is the attitude of the players about change? This is what is important. Sometimes you find in elite players, in elite athletes, that they are reluctant to change. And these girls, these women, because they are women, even more, with more than 30 years of age, some of them, they were able to change. And that was a big, this is important. It's not easy for a 30-year-old to change things that have done for many years. Okay? But I think this change was very important, the attitude to change, to take more risk, to do things that maybe I didn't do before. But I have to go out from the comfort zone, all right? And I think that was a great quality of this team, really. And I think this is something that, now if you ask about the campaign, I don't know if you were in the second part already, I think it's something that, that Stuart are happy because I think he's aware of the need to implement this kind of philosophy, you know, of being able to change. If we do the same, we will be the same in 5 years. We have to do something different. Not because we have to do something, because we need to do something.
So just about the place changing, I think from my perspective, it's obviously Chema's the head coach and he's much closer to the team and obviously he's focused on court. But kind of off court, I'm looking at how it's impacted really positively across the whole of the sport. So I don't think the players have changed that much in the sense that they've always been really generous with the time. So, you know, prepared to do talks in schools, come to finals and meet some of the players, you know, aspiring teenage girls that are playing in competitions domestically. You know, working with them to maybe promote them more, get people more aware of them. We haven't got hundreds of household names in basketball yet, but you know, the girls that have performed and have been part of this team, they're becoming better known and they're becoming, you know, role models for all the young girls in the sport. And we're hoping it'll impact as deep as, say, schools. So we do know, you know, with all the other sports really getting their act together around, you know, looking at the sort of girls' market and the schools' market, I think there's a bit of a default perhaps where we know from research that a lot of teachers in schools will say, well, boys play basketball, girls will play netball or girls' football or maybe cricket. So what we've done a research about what will it take for maybe PE teachers to refer girls into basketball and feel comfortable about it. So we are looking at a teacher training programme. So, you know, we might be talking to a teacher network, but maybe use some of the British players to actually be part of the whole process. So that it's more than a tutor coming in, but actually we're into using, you know, emerging PE teachers to think about the game a little bit more, make it a bit less technical. And we've got a programme called Slam Jam, which is basically it's physical literacy with a basketball. And it meets all the curriculum standards, and we're looking to introduce that this year. We've got 170 organisations interested in delivering that in schools. So we're trying to link the top end of the sport and the inspiration those women have for the game now to the young girls that actually want to fall in love with basketball. So that generosity has always been there, I think, Gemma, but the women to do a lot more on the back of the success we're having now.
Another tool of really sort of bringing the high level international athletes to the awareness of the young girls and the women is through social media and through the media, which is an incredibly powerful tool. Despite the success the women have had over the last couple of years, and in context, it's what they've achieved is superb with the silver medal and the qualification for the pre-Olympic tournament. But it's potentially not received as much coverage as some other sports would have received. Is that a frustration for you at all?
It is a frustration, and it, in some ways, it kind of links to grassroots as well. You know, what is it about basketball that gives the profile? And some really interesting background thoughts here, which we want to bring to the fore. So, I mean, as a sport, people probably in this country don't see basketball as a national sport, but it's the second biggest team sport. So 1.2 million people play basketball. So we're kind of, you know, twice as big as rugby, four times bigger than cricket, we're bigger than netball. We're not bragging, it's just that a lot of kids play basketball. And I think a lot of it is it doesn't seem to have a very high-profile home. London's probably a bit different, and some of the bigger cities, because you know, the informal game outdoors is phenomenal. It's probably underestimated. 50% of people who play basketball play outdoors, obviously mainly in the summer. And also because basketball clubs rely on education facilities and hiring leisure centres, we don't have a home. Basketball doesn't have its own place, really. So I think that means we sometimes we're a bit under the radar. But the success of the GB team means we start to be on the radar. We're creating new talking points. And therefore, I think you know, our time has come. I mean, I've heard that from one or two of the players. You know, the success we're having with very little money, if we can get an injection of cash in the next 12 months during this successful period we're having, we do think our time's come to really flip this round. So we think the potential's there, and that's been talked about probably for two decades in this country. But this kind of success, if you maybe compare it with, let's look at netball and hockey, you know, and girls and women's football, 10, 15 years ago, they were pretty invisible. But some success, new coaching philosophy, the way to look at young players, the talent systems, profiling the game, getting it on TV, talking to journalists like yourself, you've almost got to combine the whole thing and start getting better at everything, and that's exactly what this campaign's about, which I hope we'll talk about later.
And in terms of the lack of media coverage and switching it to the players, is it something that they make much notice of? Does it sort of frustrate them, or does it actually make them think, I want to perform even better to make sure that we are getting on the back pages, or is it just something they're not massively bothered about?
Well, no, because at the end, this is the reality. I mean, when you didn't have something, sometimes you don't notice that this is missing because it was never there. You know what I mean? So it's like if someone doesn't know, I don't know what is a car, maybe doesn't miss a car, you know? I think what is important, I think they realize more that when they see, for example, the contrast with in big events with other countries. For example, I was telling Stuart. I mean, we were the only team with no sponsor in the Eurobasket. Only team. 16 teams, one team, no sponsor. We had games in Spanish television, five, in Hungarian television, French television, live, Latvia television, Serbia television, Montenegro television, Ukraine television. All these games. Seven games during the championship on television, even sometimes in more than one country. Because in Spain, five games of us were there, live. Even when Spain didn't play. Preparation games, we play in Slovenia, we play in Spain. Also television, nine games on television. No sponsor. Well, this is when people think, okay, my God, something happened here, no? You know what I mean? Something happened here. It was very interesting during Commonwealth Games because the BBC was there. And we played the semi-final against Canada. And then, apparently, they explained me that later, we were in the red button, BBC red button. But because nobody expected us to beat Canada, because we lost against Canada in the first game so many points. But because halftime we were leading, then they put on BBC, not the red button, the normal one. Okay, so this is the reality. We need to help the media to be interested, to be interested, because at the end you write things because somebody's interested. You don't write things for no one. So we have to help. But it is true that once we have done this, it's important that we get the support, and this is why we are very thankful to you for coming here. And this is why this campaign that Stuart is doing, Basketball England, I think is very important, because one of the purposes is to help people to know what is women's basketball and what we can do. This figure that he said now, I think is very interesting. I don't know that figure exactly, but 1.2 million of basketball players. I think this is amazing. This is amazing. And also people from all kind of social class, all kind of level, city, countryside, whatever. I mean, basketball is a very transversal sport, and everybody has the opportunity to play. It's not, I don't know, a very expensive sport. I mean, there are many. So I think it's not only the sport, it's also the meaning of developing dignity of many people, education, and I think this deserves more coverage. I think, and more support. Because the only thing that with no sponsor in the competition, I mean, even countries which are poorer than Great Britain were there with the sponsors. Well, I'm not talking you about Spain with five sponsors, because one here, one there, one there, one there, one there. You know what I mean? How is possible that we play Montenegro, Great Britain, Montenegro, and the game is in Spanish television live, and it's not here? Then this is when the players think and say, well, how is possible? Because for example, some of them have played in Spain, and then they get messages, hey, I saw you today in the game against Montenegro, live. Spain, Montenegro, Great Britain, Montenegro, live in Spain. Why is that? And then what happened in England? Well, in red button, I don't know if red button or green button or no button. Sorry. So this is when, this is the answer to your question. This is when people understand that something is missing. But also, on the other hand, the players have to focus, and us also, the staff, we have to focus, as Stuart said, in what we have to control. We have to speak inside the court. And this is our responsibility. And this is what the team did, to talk inside the court, not outside the court. you didn't see any press conference of the players complaining or anything. The players went to the corner and did their job, and this is what they did. And this is another excellent quality of this group of people, you know, doing their job on the court. And now this is why we are here, this is why we are able to do this campaign, because they did great job inside the court.
Could I link to that, Chema? Because I think that what Chema's just described is mirrored entirely at the community level as well. So, you know, there are, like any sport, there are thousands of volunteers supporting local people to play their game. In basketball, it's not entirely in a city, but there is a predominance of it in a city. And, you know, the effort of the sport, which is very, very much propped up by volunteers. There aren't many professional people paid in basketball. It's very much volunteer supported. And that unselfishness and that the doing nature of those volunteers without whinging, complaining or wanting any glory, it really reflects the philosophy top to bottom. And that's why it's a great sport to work in, because we're not there bashing any funders. We're not there, you know, making it difficult for anyone. We're just saying how we do our business in our sport is really important. How we go about supporting volunteers going forward is getting more important because of all the pressure on people's time and finance. And, you know, how Chema and this GB Wins team, which is remarkable with the amount of resource we've got, we're just making the best of what we've got. What we're really hoping, and I don't like using the word hope, but we are hoping at this point, that we've earned the right to get the attention of maybe brands or maybe some funded public funders that just see the game for its real value, and we're punching way above our weight with very little resource. And, you know, we'd just like people to recognise the volunteer effort and the professional effort on a shoestring, really. And it's great, you know, you talk about, you know, the way your organisation covers sports just at the cusp of, you know, being on the radar, really. It's really good you're covering this today, because it's like, what else do we need to do to go about business professionally and locally to get some support?
That's right.
But we're not here with a begging bowl in this conversation today. We're far from it. We're just saying we're getting on with our business. We're doing our best at national level. We've got some brilliant volunteers. And at some point, and we think soon, our time will come.
Yeah, but it's important. I fully agree with him. It's important to move forward, but to see what we have to improve. You talk about the motivation, talk about the attitude. Some players in this team have another jobs, and they had to leave for 5 weeks the job, losing the money, losing the time, and others playing WNBA, left the U for 1 month. Another player is married, husband lives in the United States, is here. I mean, all the players did a great effort to be here because they are motivated, committed to play for GB. And they have the ambition to do something. And I think this deserves the recognition, not only for the result, for the commitment, for the effort, for the attitude of saying, okay, let's try. Sometimes in a sport you don't get the result, but the attitude is important. I was telling before, we were talking, last year for Commonwealth Games, some players stopped their contracts with clubs before the season because the games were in April, and then they stopped the contract before. They didn't get money for the last 2 months because they wanted to play for England at the Commonwealth Games. I mean, this is the attitude. But it's important to help, not to abuse about that, okay? Because they are very nice people, then, okay, nothing happened. No. I understand, I know that the British Basketball Federation and everybody involved, Basketball England and all the whole nations, are trying to solve to improve the conditions, and I think, but it's not easy, because also other institutions have to believe in this project, because nobody thought we could go to Tokyo. Then we were not in the list of sports. I mean, curling had better resources than us, for example. And I understand curling is very important sport, but now. What else can we do? I remember when I was coaching Spain, that at some point the resources for the women team were very low compared with the men team. The men team was silver medal in Olympic Games in Los Angeles. The women didn't. And then they say, okay, well, but the men get a result. You don't. Okay. Now, but at some point, the results were there. And then, okay, what happened now? So now the results are there. We have proven that we can be top sport in Great Britain. Now we need the support. And this initiative of the campaign, I think, is a very important thing, because this will help people to know about this. And many girls are now looking, what happened in basketball? I want to play. They were following us, El Positive Glasses, what is this? Okay, this is it, you know? And then all these projects that Stuart has explained and are really very important. This is the moment to do that.
You've spoken both there about this being the moment, and it certainly does feel like it's the moment. And we've spoken a little bit about the initiative, so we'll take a quick break there and we'll be back for more in the second part very shortly.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
So welcome back, listeners, to the second part of our Women's Basketball special interview here. And we're going to switch our focus now slightly away from the international teams and more to growing the sport as a whole. And one of the reasons we were invited here today is the launch of the brand new, exciting all-girls campaign. So I was just wondering, Stuart, if you could outline what that is and what brought about this new initiative.
Yeah, so thanks for that, Will. So yeah, the launch is this weekend. This weekend is the start of the WBBL women's season. It's the trophy weekend, and we wanted to really put a spotlight on the women's side of basketball. There's a few reasons for that. As I was saying earlier, 1.2 million people play basketball. And out of that, one in four are female. And certainly the membership of basketball women have seen the potential of the women and girls game, but have seen this disparity between boys and girls and women's basketball. So as a governing body, ethically, and looking at the equality issues and all the things that basketball can do for young girls, we looked at this sport and said, we have to address that disparity. What can we do to actually make it more accessible for young girls and indeed women? And it's not just a campaign around playing. So whilst playing is a key focus, we're looking to get more women into coaching, more into officiating, both refereeing and table officiating. We need lots of officials to run basketball. The volunteer base, because without the volunteers in the clubs, the sport's very, very thin and won't go anywhere, and they're really important to us. But also in school environments and college and universities, looking at the sort of teacher train network and the teachers that can inspire kids to play basketball. And there's a few strands to it. So the first strand really is to create an awareness that this amazing sport is very accessible and it's cheaper than people think. They can play outdoors in schools and clubs. The second strand is to link with the plight of the GB women's team. So we've got this Road to Tokyo theme going, and a lot of young girls are like grabbing onto that, and it's building aspiration in the sport. There's a belief in basketball that this is going to be a really special year, so we're exciting people about getting involved. And then the third strand of the campaign is to grow a network of ambassadors. So initially we're looking for attracting about 10, 15 people in each region. Where they don't have to be basketball experts, it could be anybody really with a passion for the game who can influence other people, girls or women, put on activities, activate things, maybe push things out on social media, celebrate stories and successes. We're presenting lots of information tomorrow about women's firsts and bests in the game. There's a lot of things that's happened in the game in this country where women have been pioneers in basketball, but are unsung heroes, really. But one of the planks underpinning this is to get this network going across the country where we have more capacity from volunteers to enthuse more people to get involved in the game from a female perspective. And one of the underpinning kind of elements of this is a new program called Slam Jam. So it's really, we've designed it as a physical literacy program, so it's, it kind of fits with Key Stage 2 in schools. There's quite a few of the sports that have done something similar, but we've designed it for physical literacy. So literally is running, catching, throwing, shooting with the ball so that people at a young age can fall in love with basketball. But we're really unselfish about it. It's not like we have to get all these girls involved in basketball. Boys can play it too. The program suits boys. But it's about giving the youngsters all the basic physical literacy skills so they can go on and do any sport they want. And if they love basketball while they're doing it and they want to join a club, then that's part of the program too. So there's those kind of strands. And then amongst all that, we are peppering it with some strong recruitment throughout the year. We've got a calendar of of 12 different themes over the year, all linked to the Road to Tokyo. So, for example, 1 month's like getting to coaching, so people who were maybe hesitating and thinking about it from a woman's point of view should do it, looking at things like supporting with mentoring programs, so there's lack of confidence maybe, and we'll encourage more people to take that leap forward and work with them. Same for refereeing. So tomorrow when we launch it, we've got some great speakers. We've got Claire Wardle, our chair, she works at Coca-Cola, and she's been a brilliant advocate of girls basketball for 3 years. She's been chair. And Jim Serka is the chair of the Women's Professional League in this country. They're going to kick it off with me tomorrow. And then we've got an amazing story with around refereeing. We've got a school teacher and pupil, Kate Underworth, who's an international referee, one of our best female referees. And as a teacher, she inspired a young girl called Jess Fox. By her admission, Jess said she was never brilliant at basketball. But she was really into basketball, and her teacher Kate saw her as a great organiser, can sort of command respect on a court and encourage her to take up refereeing, which she never really thought about. And they're speaking to her about their story. It's a beautiful story, and it'll encourage other girls to think about, well, actually, you know, if I'm not a super sporty type maybe, but I'm interested in the game, there's still a place for me in it. We've also got Patricia Fairclough, who's a legend in the game. She's done loads of pioneering work in basketball. She's the chair of the London region. She influences thousands of girls and women in the game. She's going to talk about her experience. We've got some extracts from some of our top domestic coaches. And then we've got Chema at the end of the conference talking about building winning teams and the kind of stuff that you've been talking about today. We're taking an edited highlights package from the conference, and we're pushing that out to interviews anyone that's interested in basketball to get involved.
One thing you mentioned there was about the mentoring schemes and helping people to build confidence and things like that. And we're seeing a big push at the moment to get a lot of youngsters, and particularly young girls, more active than they are. I think we've all seen the statistics and how damning they are. And how important do you think basketball can be in actually, you know, getting people out there doing sports and raising those statistics even further?
Well, I think this is massive, and I think because basketball, perhaps in this country, is not seen as a national sport, it's been invisible. But I think this is about this campaign. We're working on the basis that will create a much bigger awareness about what exists already. So there's lots of pickup games and informal stuff in courts in lots of parks up and down the country. But they're kind of invisible. And we did some experiments in the last couple of years with local authorities, who were the landowners of parks. And we've worked with them to refurbish about 10 parks and introduce new court spaces or refurbish old court spaces. And what we've found is that if you give, boys as well, but particularly give girls the choice, how would you like this court redesigned? You know, coming up with colour schemes and different ways of presenting the court, and then helping them, empowering them to feel this is their space. We've had a lot of success where the game's suddenly visible in a local park and people are playing, you know, the nets and the hoops are in better condition, the court looks in a decent state, it's owned by the local girls and local boys, and it's a safe space as well. And that's got real traction over the 10 experiments we've done in 3 or 4 different cities in the last 2 years. So giving basketball a home and creating safe spaces for boys, but in particular girls, is really key. And then what we're trying to do with that idea is linking it with local clubs, so there's a bit of security, a bit of ownership from the local clubs, there's a connection for recruitment maybe. So there's a lot around that. And then just back to the chat we're having earlier with Chema and the women's team, we found that a lot of the GB players have given up the time to do talks in schools. And you know, if clubs are recruiting girls that are new to the game, then they go in and doing visits and encourage them to think about, you know, joining a club and playing for fun. There's an interesting thought we've got here about clubs being perhaps more accessible about allowing people to play for fun and then letting them make a choice about whether they want to compete or not. I think a lot of sports in this country in the past have probably gone straight into let's recruit and compete. And it's pretty obvious from the research we've done with a lot of young girls who aren't really playing basketball at the moment. I want to play for fun. I want to play with friends. I don't want threatening environments. I don't want to be judged. You know, if I'm no good at basketball or sport, I don't want to be judged because I just want to play for fun. So educating the providers or helping them find ways of creating really fun, safe environments is a big part of the thrust of the campaign, really.
And how important is something you've touched on previously about the team going in and speaking to people? How important are female role models, whether that be the international athletes, whether that be the head coach of the local club, whether that be their mum or their mum's friend? How important a female role model is going to be in growing this area for women in basketball?
It's massive, and it's talked about a lot, and you can sort of use the soundbite and people glaze over it, but we've got real evidence of this being a sweet spot, really, in terms of trying to scale up the participation from young girls. And I'll give you a real example. We're fortunate to get some money from Sporting for a program called Satellite Clubs. I think there are several governing bodies in England that get that support. And the point of the program is that you equip local clubs to attach to a lot of network of local schools. You give them a taste of that sport in a fun way, and you encourage them to retain that sport and join the club. And a couple of years ago, we started challenging ourselves about why haven't we got more local girls participating in programs, joining clubs? Why have we got such a dearth of female volunteers around coaching? So we encouraged more women to be part of this satellite club, and we found that when even if they weren't like an amazing coach, but just good empathy with young girls, role model, understanding what they wanted from a fun-based session, that the participation tripled. And then the retention levels back in that club increased because there was a trust between, you know, the young girl and the coach. Not that that can't be done with male coaches, but it just struck a chord easier. And this thing about role models and the fun and the relationships and the sort of probably more emotional side of basketball just really came out and flourished. So that's one of the reasons, as part of the campaign, we're going to do some promotion to encourage more women, irrespective of their ability in basketball, to be part of a volunteer base, be it ambassadors, or be it coaching at whatever level they want to aspire to. So that's a really important part of it. More role models, more enthusiasm at local level, and developing the kids' interest no matter what their ability is, really.
And why do you think in the past there has been such a disparity between the number of boys and girls, or men and women playing and being involved in the sport?
I guess you look at the history of the game. I mean, you look at kind of, I don't like to compare ourselves to the States because it's a totally different animal, isn't it? But, you know, look at the history of the NBA. And then a huge lag, and then all of a sudden, you know, in the mid-90s, the WNBA emerges. And, you know, you could look at that in lots of different sports in this country where, you know, the whole societal thing where men came forward and had the accessibility and so on. You know, it's well-trodden territory, that. But there's a few fundamental things that we're across now which we know we can tackle as barriers. So if I could give you an example, you know, the point earlier about teachers feeling confident to teach basketball. On the face of it, at a sort of a mid-level and an elite level, it's quite technical. So stripping the game back to something as simple as running, catching, throwing with a ball and shooting for fun, and stripping back those technical things that sometimes can break the game up for people who aren't familiar with it, is really important. And I think also cultural change in schools. So, you know, we've probably missed 15 years of teacher training around the basketball element. Not completely, because it does happen, but not on a huge scale. So I compare ourselves with Australia. When we were in the Commonwealth Games, we spoke to a lot of people over there who had done some great stuff around elite and participation. And they did a huge sweep in all the teacher training colleges where they got more male, but in particular female teachers that were training to be really comfortable at basketball. And, you know, there isn't this default boys play basketball, girls play something else. It's like basketball is an obvious choice for young girls in Australia. So we want the same thing to happen here. So I think a big sweep around the teacher train network over the next 3 years is another strand of this campaign.
And in fact, Australia has a less population, and they are also very powerfully netball. Because I was a student here in England, 81-83 in Manchester, and at that time, women's basketball was nothing, almost nothing. Well, some people play, some class, but compared with what is now. And then the reason was, okay, but this is because netball, you know, because netball takes the players. But okay, Australia is a good example that they can live together, netball and basketball, you know, because they are top teams in netball and basketball both, no? And here with much more population, there is no reason why. I mean, but I don't think netball is a competitor. It's just another sport. And okay, there is room for everybody. And I think, look, even before this success of the last 2 years, I think women's basketball in England, in Great Britain, has improved a lot. One thing, for example, the WBBL, the Women British Basketball League, I think, which is now the sixth year, I think, that was a big improvement. Many clubs have developed a lot. Now the level of the league is better. is growing. I think this is important. Role model, as you said. I mean, if you see there is a professional or semi-professional in this moment league, this is a good in something to, okay, I want to be there, no? This is important. And also I think it's important to highlight the effort of the clubs, because the clubs sometimes under very, very difficult conditions, they have been able to keep women's basketball alive and always also to improve. And even the national team in 2011 and 2013, they qualified for Eurobasket and they did a very good Eurobasket. Not as good as now, you know, 9th position, 10th position, something like that. But, okay, what I mean is that women's basketball has been growing. And why is that? Because there is the energy is there. As Stuart said, people play basketball. A lot of people play basketball here. And the girls want to play basketball. And they play basketball. And then, okay, even with very low help, they've been able to improve. Now, with this campaign, we hope now to do it even more, you know? But the attitude is there, the desire is there. Now we need to put things like this campaign to help this desire to become even better, you know, than what is now. And I think this is clear, that the men want to play basketball. Traditionally, in all sports, men have done more than women, except netball, because the men don't play netball, you know. But in other sports, traditionally, men did more than women. But now women in these days are as men, you know. And so I think this campaign is perfect for this moment.
Yeah, just to build on that as well, the research we've done quite a lot with a lot of young girls in school and out-of-school environments, and there's different routes in for boys and girls, but certainly girls, are, you know, the whole thing about fashion, music, cool sport, the imagery of it, you know, the kind of whole approach from the women's GB team, the way they conduct themselves, everything's a route in, so it's not just about the ball. A lot of it is about off-court and the fun and the social and the music and the fashion. So it's multifaceted, and I think this campaign will, not that the governing body has the resource to drive everything, but what we're trying to do is almost like lift the lid off the energy in this sport and let it breathe and let people express themselves in the sport. And when you, I'll give you a quick story. I was went to the Bucks finals end of last season. I sat with some of the young students and I was just watching them having to consume the media on their phone. And, you know, they were flicking into the game. They were looking at some really... I remember one player had some really weird basketball gear on, and they were looking at where did he get it from, which stores had it. Everyone was talking about the gear. Then they were talking about playlists from a couple of the players. And I was looking at what they consumed. It was off the scale. They weren't just watching a game of basketball. The whole thing was like, you know, it crossed everything they were thinking about. And I talked to the students after, and I said, what do you think basketball industry is doing? And they said, well, be less corporate. So, well, we're a governing body, so we've got rules, regs, we govern the sport, we have to have that side of it. But they were saying, yeah, but that's fine, do that, but allow young people to step in and express the game for you. So we're, again, part of this campaign, we're looking at things like, do we do a handover to a group of young girls for social media weekend and cover some games and let them express the game they want to express it. Now, it's pretty brave for a governing body to do that, and I think with your role, you know, you probably typical swallows before you handed over your social media from your governing body, but it's like it's a young person's sport, and we've got to allow these people a way of shaping its future, really. So that's all part of the campaign, really.
And to finish off the interview, and this is a very theoretical question, but I guess where would you like to see the game go in the next 5-10 years?
We would like to be at the forefront of the nation. Today's a start, really. We'd like to have more successes for the women's team, but also the men's team, because the men, I think, now are looking over the shoulder going, hey, you know, the girls have done this amazing thing, and with less money, might I add, and that's not right going forward. We're going to solve that one. So it's like, well, what do we need to do? So that's really good that the men are kind of like getting onto the coattails. But basketball needs a home. It needs a profile. It needs a home. So schools basketball is prevalent in every school in the country, and people are now talking about, wouldn't it be amazing at these outdoor courts and all the opportunities outdoors, is that kids are walking around with a basketball under their arm, rather than just kicking a football on the street. And it happens in Spain and America and other places, and I hate comparing ourselves, but if you can lift the lid off this sport in this country, I think we'll see a lot more boys and girls walking around with a basketball under their arm and shooting hoops in neighbourhoods.
It's a perfect
in
word.
10 years, probably I will be dead, so I don't know. I will be dead. It's too long. You know, I will die before that. But I think 5 years, 10 years, I fully agree with Stuart. I think this is the key. And then after that, the results will be there. I mean, if all these things happen, the results will be there. There's no reason why Great Britain cannot be one of the top countries in basketball. The talent is there. The physicality is there. We don't have in Spain people like we see here in the street or in the basketball courts. The talent is here. But it's important to do all this job. But I think in 10 years, in 5 years. But even look, it's very interesting because before Eurobasket, are we okay? Or before Eurobasket, some people were thinking, let's do some plan for 2028 Olympic Games in Los Angeles. No? But now we are thinking about 2020 in Tokyo. You know? This is interesting, you see? So it's good to have long-term goals, and I think all these plans go from there, but it's also important to think in the present, because without the present, there is no future. And I think this is why, okay, we prepare this campaign 5 years, 10 years, but what is going to be the outcome of this campaign next year? I think this is important to measure that. The short-term goals is important. Otherwise, we can be, I'm not saying in this case, but let's prepare for 24. No, now 28, now 32, now 36, now 50. We need to think in short-term also. Have a goal, medium, long-term, 5 years, 10 years, but what is the outcome next year? If we speak next year, October next year, something has happened. Something had to happen.
So I'm going to see you in Japan.
Yeah, probably after Japan,
okay,
for example.
That's good.
No, but only about that campaign. Maybe more girls playing basketball, maybe more women being coaching, maybe more referees women, maybe more basketball in media. And I'm sure we are going to see results in 1 year. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yes, absolutely. That's why we're committing today. Absolutely.
Okay. So I think it's important to have the long-term vision, but also to move forward step by step with short-term goals, because it's the only way to improve.
Couldn't agree with you more, and I know I'm feeling very enthused about the future of basketball after this interview, and I know our listeners will be as well. So thank you both for your time. We cannot wait to see how you do at the pre-Olympic qualifiers and hopefully at Tokyo 2020, and we cannot wait for the launch of their campaign. We'll be giving you all the support we can, and we're very excited for the next few years, so thank you again. Once again, a huge thank you to Chema and Stuart for their time, and to Promote PR for setting up the interview. We will definitely be keeping a close eye on the team as they build up to the Olympic qualification tournament, and who knows, perhaps we'll even be able to welcome one of them onto the show too. As usual, you can find us across the different social media platforms using the handle at SportsBuildPod, and you can also email us at sportsbuildpod@gmail.com. That's all for now, but we'll be back very soon with some more exciting, in-depth interviews.